Okay, warriors, you are listening to Unqualified Therapists. Remember, stay wild and weird.
Hey, warriors, this is Amy.
And I'm Sarah. We started this podcast because mental health is complicated and the stigma surrounding it can make us feel alone.
So we are here to share authentic stories in order to normalize and prioritize mental health.
We believe in professional therapy. We both use it on our own healing journeys.
But we also know it isn't one size fits all. So we are here to provide tools from our own experiences,
as well as those from our guests and professionals that come on the show.
Thank you for being here as we navigate the complexities of mental health and mental illness together.
Remember, hold on, warriors. We're gonna make it. Warrior.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Unqualified Therapists.
We are so glad to be back here in the studio with you all. And it is the holiday season.
Sing
it. It's the holiday season. There he goes.
Nobody wants me to do that. You have to do it.
And I've got that raspy voice right now. So back in Vegas, like a lounge singer.
A side note, I feel like that's like what you should be doing.
Oh my God. I would thrive.
I know you would.
That would be.
I see you leaning on the piano.
Just going to say that. Give me a sparkly dress. Let me lean on the piano.
That gold one we tried on last
night. Yes. Hello, everybody.
Oh my. Anyways,
we are on the, I was going to say in studio, but we're not. We are on the air with a fabulous guest today that we are so excited to have. We met her on Talk Pittsburgh, and the second we heard her talking, we said,
we both looked at each other.
She's got to come on the show. So you all are in for a treat today because we have Dr. Natalie Gentile. She is a family and lifestyle doctor and self-proclaimed healthcare disruptor, which, you know, we love a disruptor.
Love them.
And she owns a weight neutral direct primary care practice.
Woo!
Welcome, Dr. Natalie Gentile.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on with us. We're so excited.
The feeling was mutual when I met you guys at Talk. I was like, this is a vibe that we need to follow through with.
Yes.
I love those green room connections. They're my favorite.
They are
great.
Yeah. So today we're going to be talking about, with the holiday season coming up, we all experience these fun times. And I was going to say, especially as women, but I don't feel like that's necessarily true because it is across the board for everybody. But I will say it is a little bit more heavy on the female side.
Oh, for sure.
Of responsibility with this. But this whole diet culture and watching what we eat, and oh my gosh, now that I'm eating all of these things for the holidays, I gotta go more, you know, exercise more, and all of the things that we feel and have been conditioned to feel and have been put out there and told to us right to our faces. And you know, we've
and
had
like
these
the pre-guilt of like, oh my God, I'm gonna eat all of that, oh no, you know. And then also trying to balance that with like moving your body just so you don't feel sick. Being okay with that, but it's not like I'm going to go kill myself at like a, I don't even know, like some sort of fitness, like where I'm sweating because I got to get all the calories out. So that balance too.
Yeah. This topic is, I'm pretty sure, my favorite topic to talk about. And I think, you know, we discussed before the show just how pertinent it is, especially this time of year. Frankly, it's pertinent 365 days a year. But, you know, when we start to hit this holiday season, Thanksgiving to Christmas, it is like this endless slew of either you're thinking about what's going to happen ahead of time, or you're in the moment at some holiday party gathering and you're in it, or it's the afterward where you're just feeling, you know, shitty afterward. It's like this whole season is a constant time period of body shaming, you know, problems with your own self-image, and problems with like how you're going to navigate some of these conversations that you know are inevitable in some of these social scenarios.
Oh my goodness. I'm so glad we're talking about
what to wear.
I'm all fired up.
So you're not, so it's not tight. So it's not, you know, I don't know.
Thank you.
Yes. You know, you want to be comfortable, and then you also want to look cute, but then you also don't want anybody saying anything to you. I don't know. And maybe I'm only saying things to myself in my head.
No, I mean, it could be. I think it's very well one of those things too, where we are projecting how we are feeling.
And then also not wanting to do that in front of your kids. That's yes. The big thing for Sarah and I. Mm-hmm. We're like, oh my gosh, we cannot say these sort of things out loud or anything in front of our kids, because that's just bad cycle.
Yeah. So what's your biggest, so I want to start with the people that we're not closest to and kind of work our way in. So there's a lot of company Christmas parties that we're going to be attending and things like that, and holiday parties that, you know, you have to go and make your appearances at. My husband has one coming up and he's like, you're coming with me. I need your moral support. I was like, do I have to? Do you have any advice? Especially when it's somebody that we're not, you know, necessarily, it could be, you know, we don't know them well, or it's a work relationship, to navigate those conversations.
Yeah, I think those are especially challenging because, you know, if we're going with a partner, a spouse, or just our own work party, you know, where we're going even alone, there's this pressure of like, I've got to have this air of having it together, or I've got to like represent my spouse or partner, and I've got to be super fine, and so that everyone talks about me and thinks that I'm like the best, right? Yes. It's just this different, right, vibe than like a family mm-hmm. gathering, which is its whole, you know, separate thing. But I think that what we lose sight of a lot in these scenarios is our own personality and our own, like what's best about us. We're trying to put on an air so that people can perceive us in some way. And a lot of times when we're functioning in that space, we're not really shining the best we can as our own individual selves. Like, I'll give you an example. You wear something that's like super tight because you think that it needs to look that way, right? And you need to like wear something real flattering, and then you just feel like garbage all night. So you don't eat anything, right? Cause you don't want to get bloated, or you don't want people to see that your stomach looks a certain way, right? Like, it's these games we play with ourselves. So you don't eat at all, or you eat something and then you feel awful because you think you look a certain way in that outfit. And like, just walk yourself through those logistics. How is that going to go well? How are any of these roads going to go well, right? Like, you're going to feel garbagey no matter what. And I think that that's where we start to get hurt. And it's really not unique anymore. We're not our unique selves, but we know that if we're actually going to like wear something comfortable, we're going to eat beforehand so we don't feel hangry and gross during that party. We allow ourselves to partake in what might be their food drink wise. I think that's when you start to actually be most comfortable, right? And then you're going to probably put off a much of a better vibe than you were going to like in that pressure situation.
No one wants hangry Amy. I'll tell you that much, because that's way worse than like not feeling great in what I'm wearing, Amy. I'll tell you that. It's like, I get to be so miserable, totally miserable.
I like the idea of eating a little something before you go too.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, I have a gluten allergy, so I do that anyways. I've kind of conditioned myself because I know that I don't expect to go somewhere where they're going to have something I can eat, and then I get hangry. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
I counsel patients a lot on the binge restrict cycle that like most all of us do. Like, I had an eating disorder, but I'd say a lot of people have disordered eating, right? And we do this binge restrict thing where it's like, well, I'm going to party tonight, so I'm not going to eat at all. No breakfast, no lunch, no snacks. Then I'm going to show up starving to said party because I know there's going to be food there. And then you end up eating a bunch of stuff there that might even not be aligned with like how you feel best, or you don't even eat there because you don't want to eat in front of other people, and you end up binging when you get home later. Mm-hmm. And so you've restricted, then you've binged, then you restrict the next day because you feel bad about it, then you binge again. And I think that cycle is so much more common than we realize. And I think we put it and set it aside for people with eating disorders. And I know from clinical experience, that's not the case. This is a very common behavior, and the holidays really bring it out.
I think people justify that and say, well, I'm just fasting. because there's the whole intermittent fasting that's, you know, so popular right now. Mm-hmm. And then that's what they say that's happening and why they're doing it. But you're absolutely right. It's not, it just makes you more hungry or it makes you more sick when you do eat.
Mm-hmm. Right. And intermittent fasting, time restricted feeding, when done properly and when done like in a way that how it was intended to be, the stuff you're eating is one, not binging, you know, the behavior of it. And two, it's nutrient dense, health promoting type foods that, again, make you feel better. Whereas I think when we all want to like tell ourselves stories, right? Like it's not just diet culture's fault. It's not just, external factors that are telling us how to eat and what, like we're telling these stories to ourselves too.
For sure.
They're certainly fed by those external messages, but we also can perpetuate them and tell ourselves stories like, I'm just fasting. Well, you're just putting a label on something when in reality you really are kind of feeding into your own kind of shaming cycle.
Right, exactly. That's a great way to prep then for our holiday parties for work. So now when we move into going with our families, and we have to, not have to, I shouldn't say have to, because you can make the choice to not see some people if it's best for your mental health, and make that choice if you need to. But if you are going to choose to see family during this season, what are some things that we can do in preparation for those kinds of meals? Because I want to throw this in here too, because I have a hard time eating in front of people because I'm bigger. So I always have this story in my head that like while I'm eating, people are judging me and watching me and thinking, why is she eating that? Because she needs to lose weight. So that's my story that kind of runs through. That doesn't come out of nowhere, though. That's from past experience. Mm-hmm. Listeners, if you're a longtime listener, you know the stories. We've told them. But, you know, so just with that in mind, I don't know. Have you ever felt like that, Amy?
Yes. Yes. Often.
I mean, she's not a bigger girl, but I mean, we're women. So it's like.
We're women. And so you do survey the room and you do look to say like, oh, well, I'm the biggest one here. So, right. You know, maybe I shouldn't. And so, yeah, that's part of the story. And then the other part of the story is that I don't know if you've experienced this, but a lot more lately, especially since certain medicine has come out for weight loss, everybody has to talk about like, I'm going to eat this because of this. And I'm only going to, or like really justifying all of their food intake. Or talking about, you know, well, it makes it so that I can only have like two bites or whatever. And I always say it is the most boring conversation that I could ever have. And it makes you go down like 10 notches in my like book. Cause I'm like, oh, this is a really sad, boring conversation. But at the same time, in my head, in the back of the head, there's a story that plays that I'm like, well, maybe that's,
I should be doing that.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, I shouldn't eat this either. And, you know, all of this stuff, there's so much talking about what you're eating, like either eat it or don't, I don't care. Mm-hmm. But like, do we have to analyze it in front of everyone to make everyone feel like you, I think it's just to make them feel better, right? Like I'm just justifying it out loud.
Yes, the conversations about what you're eating and why is.
Oof. And it wasn't like that for a while. There was a quietness of this, but then ever since this medication came out and it was so freely available, and now every single person I know is on it, that now the conversation has started again and it's just constant. You know, I know I got a little off topic there, but it's just kind of, it's been in my brain. I'm like, why is this? Why do we talk about this all the time now? Mm-hmm. You know?
No, that's right on topic, Amy. So, I mean, really, when I start to think about, to answer this question, Sarah, about like, what are we doing at family gatherings, start to think about two buckets, indirect and direct body shaming and health messaging. Okay. These two buckets, I think, first of all, bringing awareness to them and having insight to them is the way that we can start to prepare for these events. So, the direct stuff is very blatantly obvious. It's, you know, the family member who says, are you sure you want another bite of that? You know, are you sure you want another serving? I thought you were on a diet. I'm worried about your health. You know, I'm worried about your health. Are you sure you want to choose that? It's like, okay, you're not a martyr. Like, you're not worried about my freaking health. I understand that most people aren't ill-intentioned. Let's call that. They're not malicious. But do you really think they're sitting worrying about you developing diabetes?
No.
No, they just don't like the body you're in. And they don't want you to look like the thing that, like, you know, how they think you shouldn't. Or how diet, that's direct, okay? Right? That's direct body shaming. That's direct, like, this kind of messaging. Indirect, it's insidious, and we've all grown up with it. Like, all of us that are pretty much in the range at this point, let me think about it. 30 to 70 age-ish range right now.
Yeah.
We grew up with it in some way, shape, or form, hardcore.
Yes.
It's the indirect messaging of, did you see your aunt? She put on weight. Did you see your cousin? Boy, oh boy, she looks great. I heard she's on that new medication and she lost all kinds of weight. Oh, I heard so-and-so, you know, is on this diet. Oh, I heard so-and-so doesn't eat this at all because it's inflammatory. Okay. Like, they use these sexy, you know, stupid words. First of all, it's the she's on a detox. And it's all this indirect messaging, right? That we hear when somebody's talking about other people, but we're hearing it. And then we internalize it and say, well, wait a second. Should I be thinking that about myself? Man, if they think about that person that way, I wonder what they think about me. And that's what I think is, like, that's all the time. The direct messaging, I think we hear it kind of blatantly at parties, but the indirect stuff, we're doing it all the time to each other. We're doing it to ourselves in front of our kids, you know, and then it comes out for sure when we're around family gatherings. And so when we start to bring awareness and insight into these two buckets, I think it starts to almost become like, you can laugh about it in some ways, like, wow, this is so, again, like Amy said, it's just so stupid. Yeah. Like, it's so boring. Oh my God. Same message. I've been hearing this my whole life. Same message again. Seriously, we're still on this conversation, you know? And I think it helps us to start to distance ourselves from even getting engaged into it. And then you walk away, you walk away from it. And the commentary, when someone says to you, like, are you sure you want another serving, could straight up literally be, thank you for your concern. Not your problem, right? Thank you for bringing it up. I'm good with my choices and I appreciate, you know, your feedback, but it's unsolicited. Like, you know, when you hear people talk like that in front of your kids, I've straight up said before, when I hear people talk like that in front of my children, please do not talk like that in front of the kids. I'm not trying to perpetuate the stuff that I was raised on with this kind of messaging.
I love that.
That is a great one.
Yeah. Great response.
Disruptive.
Yes.
Yeah. Disruptive. And I can disrupt a lot of things, but that I can tell you, I can just tell you right now, even though I want to say that I'm, like, healed. If someone said something to me like that, oh my God, days, I would cry in the corner and I wouldn't eat and I would do this and I would do that. And why? I don't know what that is. It's just a trigger maybe. But it would truly affect me. Even as we're sitting here talking, I would like to tell everyone out there that wouldn't happen, but it totally would.
Yeah.
I would spiral.
Yeah. I think a lot of it also comes from very much past experiences, the body shape you grew up in, the body shape you're currently in, when and where you've heard those kinds of messages come to you before, right? So, like, this is going to trigger different things for different people. I think it's important to recognize, I was on a different end of the spectrum with having an eating disorder, and that message was constant to me in my brain, but I never grew up in a body that was even receiving those messages. So I understand the place of privilege where I'm saying, like, I can shut that shit down right now because I've never had to be personally, I've definitely gotten the indirect where I've internalized that, but I've never gotten the direct. The direct stuff, if I got it, I'm sure I would be triggered in some way. Like, I would imagine it would totally be challenging to handle. I think it's far easier for me personally to handle these things when my kids are around it, to shut it down because the protective instinct goes in. But, like, I think a lot of us don't really protect ourselves. And, like, so we just kind of crumble into this dark hole of, we internalize it, like you said, Amy, and, like, it becomes, you know, you start to really crumble a little bit and feel awful.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the cycle is continuing because my child, who is not even remotely, like, bigger at all. And I grew up in a, what do we want to call it? A thinner body, I guess. I don't know. Mm-hmm. A different body than I have now. So I did not get direct messaging, but I saw the indirect everywhere. We were all teens in the 90s, like, seeing those those, what were the, I can't remember the magazine where it was like, I can very vividly remember them showing Jessica Simpson at like a size 8 and being like, she is,
she might have even been a 6,
like using the words like disgusting and things. I was like, oh my gosh.
And that, like, from her memoir, that wrecked her forever. She was like that. I think that's part of how all of her stuff came about. But yeah,
my whole body has like goosebumps right now because it's like the feeling I can feel for her is, oh my gosh, it breaks my heart. But that's the kind of message, the indirect messaging that we grew up looking at too. Part of that as well with, you know, media. But it's not, it's continuing because people our age are out there raising children. And so my child comes home and says, like, I get called fat and fat ass and, you know,
what?
Yeah, it's bad. It's still out there. Oh my God. I can't even tell you, Natalie, like what it does. It wrecks me. And then a family member was saying to that child's sibling, slow down or you're going to end up like your sibling.
What?
And they're, and both of them are very, they're small kids. Like, so it's just
brutal.
It's brutal.
It's absolutely brutal.
Prevalent.
And it's brutal. I actually looked it up. Pennsylvania is one of the only states, I don't know if you know this, that still requires teachers, phys ed teachers, to do weights and measurement in front of everyone in the class. My daughter, luckily, we're close enough. She confided in me. She didn't eat for 2 days. Now, mind you, she's like tiny, itty bitty, but not like the way everybody else looks.
She's got curves.
And so it was like anyone over 100 pounds was considered large. And so therefore she was like devastated and it broke my fucking heart. I was like, this is my new mission. I'm going to take this so that they don't do this anymore. But she's like, listen, I don't want to be the only one that gets pulled out not to do it.
Right.
But you know, it's just things like that. I'm like, how are people so dense to realize that that affects
damaging
them?
Right.
Yeah. The boys on one side, the girls on one side, lining them up like you're, I don't know, where are you? I don't know what, like just totally archaic stuff.
This cannot be real life. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
This is not real. What?
No, this is all these stories of this year.
Yes, this year. This all happened this year. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So okay. It's up to Sarah and I.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
Help us, Dr. Natalie. Help us.
It's, you know, in my world as a physician, this is stuff that I've tried to very much change, you know, the paradigm of, at least if, even if it's only in the way I practice, you know, and kind of throwing it out there on social media for other doctors to think about as well. It's like, it's all the things. It's not weighing someone the moment they walk into the office.
Yeah.
It's asking permission if somebody wants their weight checked. It's when you're doing, I'm a family doc, so I see from newborns on. So it's doing a well child check on a 13-year-old. And when you ask him or her to stand up on the scale, you just have, hey, face me to stand up on that scale.
Yes.
So they're not looking at the number. You don't even tell them so you don't look at the number. You know, you just say, hey, face me, just stand there. Okay, great. I'm going to get your height now. You know, and like, if it's pertinent, you check it. With kids, it's pertinent. Usually we want to make sure they're growing okay. Puberty's going normally, like that kind of stuff. But they don't need to know the weight. They don't need to know that. Like
the pediatricians are still using the BMI chart. And when Lily was like 10 or something, they said the word obese in the office. And that was just, so now I have to go talk to them before every well check and say, you are not allowed to say that. She needs to turn around. Like, I don't want this to be a thing. And when I tell you, like, I mean, both of our children are not big children.
Not like, even a little bit.
I don't even want to say sizes because I don't want to, like,
matter,
it doesn't matter.
Right.
But what I'm saying is, like, why would you use that chart with a child and let them know out loud? I don't know if they think they don't hear that. Of course they hear that. Obese is obese.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now, as you mentioned, you know, we're starting on this generation of parents that are going to be on these, you know, injectable weight loss meds.
Yeah.
And it is becoming so more, I'm not going to say available because they're frankly in, like, we're in dire straits to get it for our diabetic patients who need it. But I think it's becoming so much more accessible in these, you know, very non-evidence-based ways and compounded way. Like, we could have a whole conversation about that where I would lose, you know, my mind. But I think that it's now we are having the messaging of kids looking at parents. Why are you taking that medicine? Why are you sticking yourself with a needle? Well, I've got to lose weight. Okay. And now you're looking at your parents thinking, well, dang, I thought, and I'm not talking, I'm talking about the average person. I'm not talking about, there are certainly circumstances where we are using these meds for weight loss, and it is, there are clear indications, and we make those decisions as educated physicians. Okay. I'm talking about the parents that are coming in who the weight loss that they're desiring is probably not congruent with a health promoting need, right? Indication. And these kids are probably looking at their parents thinking like, you think you need to lose weight, then what does that mean about me? Right. And wow, they're going to go to such extreme measures to inject themselves with a medication.
Right.
Okay. Like that's now where we've put this priority in life. And this is not to shame people on those medications. I'm someone who prescribes them. I'm not shaming people, but I'm telling you the messaging, we are seeing a whole new world that we are going to be like embarking on here with kids that are being raised in this type of culture.
So what can we do when we go to the doctor's office? Because as adults can tell us though, like, honest to God, like, is it necessary for us to get
every time
as an adult? And you can tell if it is, I would love to know, but just is it? And if it's not, you know, what can we do and say?
So the short list of times when we really do need to be weighed at the doctor's office, and this is not exhaustive in case there's some doctor listening to yours, I shouldn't hit everything. All right. I'm just going to hit some high points. You have heart failure. You have liver failure. You have kidney failure. You are a newborn baby. You're at a well child check where we need to dose medications. We're following your growth curves. These are great indications to monitor a person's weight because in some instances, it's about their growth and development. In some instances, it's life or death because they're holding on to 20 pounds of extra fluid.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
putting a strain on their bodily systems. Okay. So like, let's push those aside. You are a 35-year-old person who comes in for a sinus infection. Your weight ain't going to change my management. you know? And like, frankly, me telling you at that visit, you need to lose weight really isn't pertinent to your sinus infection. And I think we see, again, I operate outside of the insurance-based world. So like, honestly, it's been 4 years now since I've been in that world. I don't even remember like all the things you need to bill for and like codes you need to put down to get reimbursed. But I can say when you at least check off that you did like weight counseling, you know, or you talked or you gave them a handout about BMI, these are things that there's pressures from higher ups in these systems to do so that you can reimburse for it and get paid for it. There's all these just ridiculous criteria that need to be met that, again, are not like evidence-based patient-centered ways of care. These are, we want people to be less fat.
Yeah.
Period. Okay, I'm just calling it what it is. And so if that's the case, and that's what's educating our discussions, you know, and influencing our discussions, we are going to be turning people away from seeking healthcare. Mm-hmm. Like they're just not going to come anymore because they're not feeling supported. They're not being listened to. Everything's being chalked up to and blamed on their weight, especially in women. We see this a lot in women. So what can you do? If you don't have any of those indications or like, you know, health conditions that are being acutely managed, you can say, I don't want to be weighed today. I mean, it's your body. And it's so wild. I posted this on Instagram, like two things that don't need to be done immediately when you walk into the doctor's office. And it was like me stepping on a scale and me, you know, doing a blood pressure cuff. One person was like, I don't know why you need to make it harder for healthcare workers by having, you know, giving patients the option to like put up a fight about this. Like we need to be able to check these things. And I was like, read my post where it says immediately, because it does not need to be done the moment you walk into a doctor's office. This can be done after a discussion with your patient, getting consent to do these things. Mm-hmm. And if you need to weigh a patient, how about saying, here's why I want to check your weight today. Are you okay with doing that? If not, fine. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I started turning around, but I do feel like I get some looks like, oh, that's so weird. Or why would you do that? Or like, I don't know. And it could be me internalizing it, but it definitely is a bizarre thing and brave thing for me to ask because I know like they're just like looking at you like, can't you just get on the fucking scale?
Right.
Like, what's wrong with you? Like, let's do it.
Yeah, well, think about it. You have 7-minute visits. You're backed up with 40 patients a day in a primary care clinic. You're churning and burning through. you've already sat for 45 minutes late to get in for that appointment. So we've got to hustle through. And so like you're holding them up by being like, no, you know, then it's just a whole vibe. It's a whole discussion then that you're holding them up. And I think, you know, the healthcare system is so beyond broken that in its own right, that's its own entire podcast episode. But I think that what we've done is really put a lot of the onus on patients when it comes to their healthcare experience. And patients now more than ever are having to be advocates for themselves. And most people don't feel comfortable advocating for themselves, especially if they are in marginalized bodies, body sizes, body colors, sexual orientation, all the things. Like these marginalized communities, let alone those not in those communities, are going to have trouble advocating for themselves. But unfortunately, that is what it has come to when our access to healthcare, continuity of care, affordability of care, health literacy, all of these things are less than ideal.
Oh my God. We need to have that episode. Let's do that episode.
Yeah, for sure. I so many things.
I'm going to kind of swing it back towards the holiday season. And because I think that if you could give us some tips on how to be less reactive and more proactive with the fact that we are going to eat more and we're going to eat more decadent things. And this is just kind of, that's what it is. Unless there's like options out, you know, I don't know, but just kind of helping us through what we can do and feel better about ourselves.
So much of diet culture with the extreme diets, with the extreme restriction messaging, makes us think that every single thing we do is all or none. Every choice we make, every piece of food we put into our mouths or don't, every minute of exercise we do or don't, is a make or break all or none situation. And we know that that's not true on one-off scenarios. So like, I think starting to prepare yourself with the thought process of, I've had so many patients come in and say, I was doing so well and then the holidays hit. And my reaction to that is like, why was it that the holidays hit and everything in your mind got derailed? Right? Because I think we go so all or none that then we just spiral into habits that it's now way past the holidays and we're still doing them.
Yeah.
The reality is eating exercise is not all or none. One or two holiday dinners where you eat things that maybe you normally wouldn't is not going to make or break your life trajectory of your health. Doing that every day for the next few years can make or break. Okay. So do you see the difference? Like these are one-off scenarios versus a perpetual sustaining habit. And what we can prepare ourselves going into holidays is trying to shed that all or none mentality, telling that voice, hey, thank you for being here, old friend, but you're not helping me today. You know, I'm going to go into this and I'm going to enjoy myself. And then tomorrow I'm going to feed myself and nourish myself. When I wake up in the morning, I'm going to nourish myself at lunchtime. I'm going to nourish myself at dinner. I'm going to take a walk and get outside and breathe some fresh air. I'm going to do some type of movement and activity that resonates with me that I love to do. I'm not going to punish myself and try and burn off what I ate. Because if we start to go into like away from that all or none mentality, all of a sudden we are intuitively doing things that I hate the word fuel our body, but fuel our soul, right? Like enjoying a cultural experience at a holiday, eating the things that your family has eaten for 25 years that brings back good memories. Wow, how beautiful is that? Mm-hmm. And why ruin that by like all of a sudden demonizing it, you know, and making it something that we need to feel guilty about?
Oh, those were good.
Yes, that is so good.
And I think it's such a great point to say, like, don't add days at the gym. Don't add, just continue with your, because I think you're right. I think what it is that it's like, well, I ate this, so I may as well X, Y, Z, you know,
forever now.
From now on. Or it's, I need to add 2 more days a week of going to the gym because I'm going to be eating all of this at the holidays. Just keep your normal routine going. Like whatever it is that you're doing to feel your soul and feel better about yourself, continue those things and then get back into your normal habits, but give yourself grace. Yeah.
Love that.
We as humans love routine. We love, you know, consistency. That's kind of how we're made, right? And I think as we, I think we can all agree on this discussion, as we get older, we really like routine.
Yes.
We want something, you know, that kind of fits into our schedule. And so one piece of advice that I'm always giving patients is building in those routine habits. I call it being flexibly inflexible. Mm-hmm. So sticking with your routine, having the things that you consistently feel comfortable doing and like to do, whether it's eating, sleeping, moving, your mental health, your meditation, those types of things, the consistent things, but the flexibly inflexible for those days where you're not going to be doing it just right at the exact same times in the exact same ways. Can you be flexible that day? Move on to the next day. And, you know, along the lines of those messaging, like we just had an example of this at my studio, Rebel Wellness, where we're, you know, we were putting together a holiday programming for, our exercise classes. And we wanted to have something on Thanksgiving. And we didn't want it to at all. Like we're very anti-diet culture messaging there, to the point where if I hear somebody has said something like, get that booty you want, like we're immediately having a conversation about it and we're kind of moving on and shutting that out from the from the way we talk to our clientele. And you know, what were we going to call our Thanksgiving class? And we called it a holiday de-stress workout, because the focus was not on getting that body right for the big meal you're going to eat that night, like burning off calories before you eat them later. Nope. It was a, let's set our minds for the day, so that we're in a place where we feel open, where we feel at ease as we go into an enjoyable evening of Thanksgiving dinner, right? And I think it's, I see it not just in healthcare, I see it all the time in the fitness industry that I'm in, that this messaging of that shaming, that all or none, that burning off, you know, and trying to make up for and punish is said directly and indirectly as well.
One of the things that I try to internalize and with my daughter as well is making everything pretty neutral. So food, there's no good or bad food. And I've heard her repeat that and I'm like, oh, that's amazing. And also there's no good or bad exercise. It's, you know, whatever is working for your body and then what you feel in that moment that you need, and trying to be intuitive about it. So this idea of intuitive eating has like, it fascinates me. And so I just thought maybe if you could talk about that a little bit, because I think even on the holidays, if we're in tune with our bodies, you know, for me, I just don't want to get sick as well. Yeah, like I don't want my stomach to hurt.
Want to feel bad.
I have worked so hard to heal my gut.
Yes.
And so I don't get sick anymore when I eat, and I don't want to like, that's what I don't want to like do. Right. So the idea of just feeling full and being done, and then knowing this is a new thing, knowing I can go back and eat more, like 2 hours later, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't know why I had to like, I don't, it was a thing. So, it probably is,
shovel it all in. Is that what you mean?
It's probably a like, clear the plate. Remember that?
Yes,
remember that when we were younger?
Yes.
We can't leave until the plate is clear. Now I tell my kids all the time, when you're full, you're full. Like we'll either toss it, put it in the refrigerator and heat it up later, like whatever. But this idea of intuitive eating, I think is just a beautiful way to manage and handle food and health and like what can nourish your body.
Yeah, I am. It's interesting working with both kids and adults, and then as well as raising littles, seeing how these conversations play out differently. With adults, talking about intuitive eating is like cracking a safe. It is so challenging because we are truly undoing all the things that we were raised to think and do. I've had so many patients say, I don't even know when I'm actually hungry or full. Like, I don't know what that means. I don't know how to cue into that. For kids, they are a prime opportunity for us to help them with that so early on. And I hear my kids saying it all the time. They're 4 and 6, Amy, they say the same things like, you know, this is not good or bad. There's no healthy or unhealthy. And thus I've seen them say, I really don't want to eat that because I don't want to feel sick later.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, this is amazing. I wish I had known that when I was a kid.
Right.
Yes. Working on that intuition of listening, even objectively, like let's take out subjectively, this is my relationship with that food. Just objectively, when you ate that, how did your body feel? Did it make your heart rate go up? Did it make your stomach hurt? Did you get kind of sweaty, clammy afterward? Did you not sleep well that night? Like, let's talk about alcohol this time of year, right? Like those of us who can't hang anymore,
yes,
as we, right? one glass of wine and I'm like, cool, I'll be up in the middle of the night. Why? I'm not sure. But starting to understand intuitively, I just don't feel well. This worsens my depression. When I eat this way, it worsens my anxiety. That is okay to start to tune into. And that's what that means. One of the things that I work with my patients a lot on is, I don't even want to call it food logging because that can be triggering for people. It's more, I ate this. I didn't weigh it. I'm not telling you, you know, like how many grams of it you, I ate X. The next column is I felt Y, you know, I felt a certain way. How were your bowel habits the next day? How was your mental health the next day or a few hours afterward? Starting to get, that's how we start to get the subjective side of things too, right? As like, how do you feel when you're eating these things at which times of day? It's not so much, I need to count my calories. Nope. That's not where we're going. We're going with listening to intuitively. I felt really full and bloated. I think I overate that time, you know, and here's why. Man, I was feeling really stressed out at work earlier that day. So when I came home, can we back it up and start to unpack some of those feelings and emotions around our choices of food?
I don't know about you, but I really needed this conversation. So I'm so thankful.
Absolutely.
And I'm glad that you brought up alcohol too, because it is something I've just had to listen to my body and I just don't really even indulge anymore. And if I do, I have one or two because I can't sleep when I drink now, if I drink in the evening. And it just makes me feel crappy. Like I do not feel, even if I have one drink, I do not feel good. And so I'm just not going to do it.
It doesn't bother me.
That's great. And that's, but that's the intuitive thing. Like,
but I will say that it is interesting. And if we're going to be intuitive at all about alcohol for me, I can hang till 2-3 in the morning, but I don't drink alone anymore. And I realize that's because my mental health is in a totally different spot. And so, you know, I used to do some damage. I mean, all the way starting from when my husband died, all the way through the stuff with work and everything like that. But like, all of a sudden I was like, oh my gosh, I don't have any drinks in the weekend and during the weekdays or like when I'm not out. And so I think it doesn't have to be any which way you listen to you. Like, you know, I know you don't drink a lot. We have one glass maybe. I know that like for me, it's fine, but I also know I'm not going to do it alone anymore because I don't feel good. Like, honestly, it just makes me tired and I have to keep going after 7 o'clock. There's a lot more to do.
Yeah. But I also want, and this is something maybe you can help us with too, is like, because I've made that choice, I always feel bad because I feel like the people that I'm with think that I'm judging them.
Oh no, girl.
And I know you don't. We have fun. We're good. You know, you do you, I do me. But it's like, I don't want people to think I'm being like all high and mighty. Like, I don't drink anymore. It's just like, I just don't like the way I feel.
You know what? It's on them. Yeah, it's honestly true. Because I like, if that's their response, then they probably feel questionable, guilty about their drinking habits. I would imagine, you know, like if it's really your choice and what you do. It's if you were walking around being like, God, I can't believe you drink that much. That's a whole different story. No. You know?
Yeah. Did you seriously just have 4 drinks?
No, I should never say that. I would never. I'd be like,
no, I'd be like, can you just drive me home?
Please? Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I'll drive you home. That's the thing. I'm like, I'll drive everywhere. Uh-huh. I got you guys.
It's a perfect duo.
It is. Oh, well, Dr. Natalie, thank you so much for coming on here and talking with us. We want to be respectful of your time and let you go. But is there anything else before we do, since we have a couple minutes, is there anything else you wanted to let our listeners know coming into this holiday season?
You've got this. Grace and self-compassion are everything. And I think if you're exuding that, that's how we can start to help others feel that way too and work on it. So just kind of spreading that, have your insight into your own body and into the silly messaging that is so pervasive and just starting to become aware of it, I think is how we're going to start to make strides in our, how we're doing during this holiday season and more to come.
And we will definitely have you back. I still want to talk a lot about mental health and physical health and that overlap. And there was another thing you said earlier that you were like, we have to do that again. And maybe it was the insurance company.
It was, yes. Uh-huh. How our healthcare system is wrecked. Yes.
Right. Yeah. So we will certainly be having you back to touch on some of those other topics. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. This was a blast.
This episode was brought to you by Sarah Simone and Amy Baumgartner. Theme song and other music provided by Epidemic Sound. All episodes are mixed, mastered, and produced by me, Sarah Simone. To help us keep making episodes just like this one, consider supporting us on patreon.com/unqualifiedtherapistsinc. Or share us with a friend, relative, coworker, hairstylist, butcher, baker, candlestick maker. Sharing us not only helps keep the mics on, but it furthers our mission in removing the stigma. If you have a mental health journey you'd like to share, email us at unqualifiedtherapists@gmail.com or reach out to us on our website, www.unqualifiedtherapists.com. Until next time, hold on, warrior. We're gonna make it. Say it loud, say it proud, shout it out, make it when we go.